Welcome back to the show, Chef. You know those conversations that start off like you're catching up with an old friend? Laughs, inside jokes, mutual admiration, and then somewhere along the way, you find yourself sitting dead still, heart pounding, realizing you've just been handed the roadmap you didn't even know you were looking for. That's what happened in this episode. Today on Chef Life Radio, I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Kristen Marvin, author, coach, former operator, and passionate systems whisperer for independent restaurant groups trying to grow without completely blowing up their lives in the process. Now, I'll be honest, when I first heard she was writing a book on multi-unit mastery, I had flashbacks to the bad old days. You know, the restaurant that wanted to be an empire without a clue about structure, people, or process. Three locations in, everybody's drowning. Seven locations in, no one even knows who's steering the ship anymore. But what Kristen's offering isn't some sanitized corporate formula. It's a real-world, boots-on-the-line, sober-as-hell framework for growth, crafted from years of firsthand experience scaling restaurants, battling imposter syndrome, and doing the hard, personal work of becoming the kind of leader worth following. In this conversation, we talk about why burnout and broken systems aren't a rite of passage. They're a leadership failure. The three P's that actually matter: people, process, and profit, in that order. How your business behavior mirrors your personal patterns. Yeah, but we go there. And why imposter syndrome isn't a flaw, it's a compass. We also get into the nitty-gritty of how to build trust, how to design your work around your life instead of the other way around, and why she's not just handing this book out, she's taking it on the road with a mission to help independent operators grow without losing their damn minds. If you're a chef, owner, or operator dreaming of more, but terrified that more just means more stress, this one's for you. Lean in, because it's time to say the hard thing right after this message. Welcome to Chef Life Radio, the podcast dedicated to helping chefs and culinary leaders take control of their kitchens, build resilient teams, and create a thriving career in hospitality. I'm Chef Adam Lamb, your host, leadership coach, and industry veteran. If you're tired of high turnover, burnout, and the daily grind, you're not alone. This podcast is here to give you the real strategies, insights, and tools you need to lead with confidence, build a culture of excellence, and craft a kitchen that works for you, not against you. Because the best kitchens don't just survive, they thrive. Hit that subscribe button and let's get started. If I sound a little tired today, I'm sorry. But we've been putting in a lot of hours over the last 3, 4, 5 weeks, putting something together very special. It's a membership community for chefs committed to redefining what leadership looks like in the kitchen and beyond. It's for those chefs who want to define success on their own terms. It's called the Chef Life Brigade. It's not quite open yet, but we're working really hard to get there. It's a living, breathing support system for culinary leaders. It isn't a networking group. It's a culture shift. Inside, you're going to find chefs just like you, learning how to lead with emotional intelligence, set boundaries without guilt, and build kitchens where people actually want to work. If you've ever said there's got to be a better way, you've found your people. We're not here to romanticize suffering or cling to the old brigade system. We're here to rewrite it together. Inside this community, you'll find the tools, coaching, and support you never got coming up. Resources rooted in real-world experience, emotional intelligence, and regenerative leadership. You'll be surrounded by other committed chefs who are asking the same questions as you are. How do I show up for my team without losing myself? How do I fix broken culture I didn't create? How do I lead without repeating the patterns that hurt me? The Brigade member community is your place to find clarity, stay accountable, and lead with more presence and less pressure. We're not here to just talk about change. We're building it one kitchen at a time. Come check it out. There's a wait list at the door, still a little ways away from opening up. But man, oh man, does it keep me up all day and all night working on it, because it is something that I'm really excited about. And I hope you will be too. If you want to learn more, go to thechefliferbrigade.com/backdoc. You'll get a little explanation about what it's all about. Maybe get you a little intrigued, wondering what the hell's going on inside. And we hope you join us. Sign up for the wait list. You'll be the first to know when it's open. thechefliferbrigade.com/thebackdoc. And now, back to the show. Hi, Kristen. It's so great to have you back on the show.
For having me.
I always have such a great time talking to you, because I am almost always going to come away with a different perspective. And sometimes that's challenging, but ultimately it's really great. So I just wanted to start off by saying I'm deeply grateful for us being connected and you being a presence in my life. And I know that we're not necessarily chatting each other every day, but
Seems like when we do, there's always something.
Every time we connect, it's always very impactful. So I really appreciate that. Appreciate our.
I'm curious. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Kind of a weird time because both of us are coming out with books. And I really liked your first one. I really thought it was great. And this one that came out is about multi-unit mastery. And I know that you had spent quite a bit of your time in multi. Why did you think that that was a topic that you wanted to speak to?
I had a huge moment. Writing the first book, as you know, was very much my memoir and really helped me understand a lot of the lessons, a lot of the things that I learned being in restaurants for 20 years. Yes, I'd helped a couple independent restaurants grow. One was an independently owned restaurant that grew from two to seven locations in 5 years, all completely different concepts. The other one was a duplication of the same concept where we grew from 6 to 48 locations over a 7 year time frame. Coaching. I've always been a lover of systems. I've been considered a little bit of the black sheep in the independent world and called corporate a couple times because I love systems so much. But I am a projector for anybody that's listening that's into human design. And so systems and efficiency mean a lot to me, who I am. I've come to learn recently.
Sure.
When I started coaching, you know, a couple years ago, I realized that I was coaching around a lot of the same pain points. Restaurants were wanting to grow, or they were growing, and it felt like total chaos. The restaurant owners felt like they didn't know if they had the right people in place. They didn't know what positions they needed to have in order to grow successfully and sustainably. And they were just, some of them were hiring people for leadership positions based on loyalty, not based on exactly the skill sets that they needed. And so after a couple years of coaching, I had book two and book three. I love my whiteboards, and I've got post-it note of ideas for next books, as I'm sure you do too. Because I have a system.
Because you have a system.
And I don't want to lose that idea. And I had a moment of insight where I sat down and I started thinking about book number two. And I was like, Kristen, there's something here. There's a common thread to the work that you've been doing with clients. They need this tool and resource. And you've already been doing this. I just didn't realize it in my career. And so this was a really fun opportunity for me to get clarity on putting together a really beautiful framework specifically for independent restaurants that they could implement themselves, that I could help where they could implement the entire thing or just one part of it and grow successfully and sustainably and be in the role that they truly want to be in.
It's interesting that you say that because growing up in the industry, there was always a chef who aspired to have multiple restaurants, right? Especially down in South Florida. Me and my crew were coming up under the Mango Gang. That was Norman Van Aken and Alan Susser. And Alan Susser just had one restaurant. That's all he wanted to do. But Norman Van Aken wanted to open up restaurants everywhere. Mark Minatello. Who's that English guy that yells at everybody? What's his name? I didn't know many of those operators that were successful because they were treating it. They're great at one restaurant and then they get to three and everything falls apart. And I got in a conversation with a friend of mine in Boston where he was a fine dining chef who decided he was going to go barbecue and ended up winning several Jack Daniel's Masters Barbecue Championships. And he told me that as he grew his organization, right at restaurant three, everything fell apart. Right when it got to seven, everything fell apart because the same mindset can't do the same thing. First off, I'm sure you've experienced this, have you not?
It's about not sitting down and being intentional and strategic about what the organizational design of your restaurant group actually needs to look like. That's one component of it. The other component is committing to yourself that you're going to let those people, once you put them in positions, let them lead and let go of all those things that you've been controlling. I work with a restaurant owner right now who has four locations, who is on the phone constantly, or has to reschedule coaching sessions with me because one of his GMs is on vacation. That shouldn't be his responsibility to deal with, right? So we're working on those things. But there has got to be, in order for restaurant groups to be successful and profitable, there's got to be layers of key people, systems in place, visibility and accountability, and that cannot be done by just one. It's just
right. I also work with a group out in California, and they are just on the verge of going from one location to four. Well, it's three in a food truck, but the food truck's $750,000. But from afar, I've seen how they're scrambling a little bit. They're hiring people. They're trying to bring in the right mix of people. And yet, it always kind of comes down to that same thing. Like, is there leadership in this position? Or is there leadership in this position? Do they have that covered? Can we layer on top of it? And I think for most of us who have been grinding, we'd find that to be antithetical. Oh, no, man. I'll just pedal faster. And I'm curious, this person that you're working with, how much of that motivation you think comes from, you know, he just wants to be valued. He's so used to deriving value from that type of performance.
It's actually fear-based.
Performance.
And a lack of trust. Hyper-vigilant mindset.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Something bad is going to happen, so I have to be present in it all the time.
And I'm just curious about, you know... What are the parts of his life he's
that's
not
what I, and that's what I always ask, moments. Right? Because how you're showing up in your business, how you're showing up in your personal life, right? So when clients, I don't let clients cancel on me very often, but if they do have to reschedule, I like to pose it back to them and say, where else are you rescheduling in your life? Where else are you not showing up? It's a tough love approach. It's fun.
Well, because it's absolutely true. And sometimes those are the moments where clarity can come from, especially from somebody who's... for lack of a better word, not emotionally attached to that person. It's almost because you're a stranger, I can tell you all this crap and you can hold me accountable in ways that people who love me or I love them can't.
But it also, sometimes it's a result of them being so head down and in their business that they haven't even taken a moment to slow down and take a breath and step back and look at what's actually on.
Yeah, I have a, just starting with a group. And the husband and wife have done everything. They've managed this, started from a small dream, and now they're going to four restaurants. And it's interesting because there are people in the organization that feel like
of course they do. Does that work? Does that work?
Yeah, I get that a rising tide raises all boats, supposedly. But is it just because now we're focused, again, kind of that fear-based nut of, oh my God, we're putting all this money in this other restaurant. We're taking from Peter to pay Paul. I mean, the human dynamic is so fascinating, especially in that kind of weird, not small, but not big organizational structure. What are some of the things that you've consistently stumbled across? Because I get that when you take one restaurant from like 7 to 48, there's got to be a really good system. Right. And there's probably very, very little room for error, or I don't want to say creativity, but this is the system. Are you okay within the system? And for some folks who grew up in Applebee's, they thrive in those types of systems. But then when you throw them in an independent restaurant, they really struggle.
Yeah.
So what do you think are some of the three or four really core kind of pillars to a small organization's success as they start growing?
Organizational development. So understanding exactly what leadership roles you need to have in your organization. Most businesses need some sort of marketing, finance, operational component, human resources, one-on-ones with your key leadership players to make sure that you're being proactive with problems and not reactive. A scorecard, so that you can stay focused on what financials mean for your business, both from a proactive standpoint, lagging indicators and leading indicators, proactive and reactive, and quarterly reviews. As humans, we tend to get distracted after 90 days. And so getting your leadership team together to review the scorecards, to talk about your people, to talk about the processes of how you're running your operation, and make sure that you are checking in on those things and constantly making adjustments as you need to continue to strengthen your organization is so powerful. You keep everybody up.
Sure. I mean, yeah, thinking about Patrick Lencioni's book about the two CEOs, the name escapes me right now, but the one is trying to take over the other. And one kind of begrudges some of the stuff that he has to do, and the other one loves it. And at the end of the book, he makes the analogy that there's only two types of leaders. One is responsibility-based leaders who know that they get to show up every day and remind everybody about the core values and what's going on and kind of being rah-rah. And then there's a rewards-based leader who, as a chef, I don't mop the floor. I don't have to do that anymore. And I found it fascinating that you're talking about multi-unit concepts, yet you developed an independent restaurant framework.
Well, independent and multi-unit can be the same, right? Multi-unit doesn't have to mean, doesn't equal chain or...
Sure. No. Yeah, I just meant when I read it, first time I was like, wow, are you talking about an independent restaurant with a group of restaurants? Like, how does that actually work? But more importantly, I love the fact that you said in the what would it look like if an organization just decided that, okay, so we're going to grow this to 7 restaurants in 10 years and then we're out. And what would it take to actually get us there? Like, sure. To your point, a marketing person. And what at what point do we bring them on?
Yep.
Like that type of planning.
If you want to grow a restaurant group from 1 to 7 in 10 years, you need a 10-year vision. And then you need a 5-year vision, and you need a 3-year vision, and you need a 1-year. It can be whatever years you want. You've got to have your end goal. You've got to know what you want to do from a revenue standpoint, locations. And then you could start to work back and say, what exactly are we need to get there? You know, when we were growing from 6 to 48, the first year, I think we opened 2 or 4, I can't remember. But what we did was we had 6 people in our corporate office. 3 of them were part-time. They were part-time servers and part-time corporate headquarter people. Overnight, we had a new CEO and real estate team come in, recruiter team come in, HR was clearly defined. And then we started to expand and get somebody in charge of sourcing. The accounting team became like 20 people overnight as we grew. I mean, it was, you know, you had build out construction and on top of real estate location. So somebody on the design team, a training department. I mean, there was just all these different areas that needed.
And did you find that there were some folks that were just kind of lost in that type of like growth? Like they didn't necessarily know where
good job of clarifying expectations because we had a board of directors that had done this before.
Do you advocate that groups, restaurateurs who are looking to grow, you know, form a board of advisors?
I think it completely depends on the way you want to grow. That we grew because private equity money came in. Okay. If it depends on if you want to grow to sell, it depends on if you want to grow to sell to your employees, depends on if you go public. You know, I talked to a group last week who's growing from 6 to 10, and they have one owner, and she's going to banks and knocking on doors and getting her own funding. And she's fine to do all that stuff on her own and isn't looking to grow and sell. She just wants to have a great brand. It's a little ego driven, I'm not going to lie. I don't know if she has a board or not. I think it all depends on what the owner feels like they need in terms of support. You know, I have another client who's growing a bakery concept from 6 to 10 in the next year and just wants an advisory board, right? So boards can play different roles too.
Right. Yep, exactly. Yeah, it's not necessarily directors, but they're a group of people that they trust that will help keep them.
Well, and Adam, there's not a one beautiful thing, as you know, about the independent restaurant space. There is no one size fits all for this, right? This framework is built to be able to customize completely. Here's the skeleton of what you need to have. Now go make it your own based on your culture and your core.
And talk to me about the 3 P's.
It's people, process, profit. It has to be people first. Right? We have got to invest in our people. We've got to have clear expectations for people. We've got to make sure we've got people, you know, this is from Gina Wickman from Traction, that GWC the role, that get it, want it, have the capacity to do it. And if they don't have that, then a conversation needs to happen. But then once you have the people in place, you start to put the systems in place to be able to manage. And when you have consistent accountability and momentum, profit.
And I get that in an organization that's growing, sometimes one or the other gets outstripped, right? Either the people or the processes, and then things start to go sideways. Why do you like working with this segment?
I loved helping independent restaurants grow when I was in this role, because it's so amazing to be able to give opportunities to people within your organization, to be able to grow internally, promote people, watch your culture thrive, invest in people of getting certifications around HR or sustainability certifications or marketing certification, whatever, is such a rewarding part of this. Every time we announced a new restaurant opening, it was so fun to see people's hands raise. And that level of engagement is just, it's beautiful. And it's really, really addictive. I found a lot of pleasure in it. I also found a lot of pain in it. And I talk to a lot of operators that have multi-unit concepts that just keep saying, I don't know how we're doing this. I don't know how this is going to be sustainable. And we really need this right now. We need this book right now. And I don't want people to feel the pain points that I did. I want them to be able to slow down and have some intention and have some support. I read Multi-Unit Leadership by Jim Sullivan when I was stepping into a regional manager role, but I haven't really seen a resource like, and so I think this portion is a little underserved at the end.
So say more, like what specifically does this need or does this serve?
It's the foundation.
Your book.
It's how do I go from 1 to 2? How do I go from 2 to 3? What are the key things that I need to think about? There's intention behind the growth and the strategy. Instead of a landlord calling you, hey, I've got a great space available for you. Oh, let me take a look at it. Okay, great. Right? It helps people go from being reactive to proactive, to being really thoughtful about how they want to grow, to really truly understand what it's going to take to be successful, and then make the decision if it makes sense and aligns with their core values or not, and the lifestyle that they want to live.
Right. That's a huge thing to kind of drop off at the very end, right? Like all of us get to design
100%.
The alliance, right? Start with how you want to live first 100%. And then back everything else in. A topic I love to bring up is, of course, culture. And how does a growing restaurant group, I mean, it seems to me that putting a poster on the wall is at least it's something. But when you talk about investing in people, you mentioned a couple certifications and stuff like that. Like what kind of, given the workforce of today, what are the things that matter to them insofar as investment in them that creates a culture such that they're the leading hiring place?
Yeah, I think culture is a result of your core values in your business. We were talking about this earlier today. When you are putting together a leadership team and building a business, you can't do that without understanding what your core values are and what your mission is to the business and your vision. When you have your core values determined, you can use those and should use those in your hiring practices, in your performance reviews, and in your hiring and firing, or your firing, excuse me. It's important to bleed those all the way through the organization so that they're consistent and that they're always top of mind for your people. I think when restaurant owners are starting out and they don't necessarily have the systems in place, everything is very personal when it comes to personnel employee issues, right? But when we can stop and bring it to the core values and say, okay, what are the core values for your organization? Oh, honesty is a big core value. Okay, great. Let's talk about how your employees are showing up. What does honesty mean in your organization? Go set that expectation for employees so that when someone missteps, you can say, this does not align with our core values of our organization, rather than I'm the asshole that's going to fire you right now. You're holding people to a whole standard, to a different standard.
I love that framework. Yeah. Love that framework. I love it. making that switch for me was a revelation. Like, oh shit. Because again, I think it's human nature that because you've never been really taught or coached or mentored on what true leadership is, that will default to personality, right? And then we start hiring people who kind of think like us and act like us. And then we start isolating the folks on the out, on the periphery who don't feel like they belong there. I want to be careful with this because it's been a while since the pandemic, and this has been a battleship going straight down the ocean for a long time, and it takes a while to turn. Are you still seeing folks who are unclear about core values and culture?
Yeah. You know how tough it's been for the pandemic. It's been way tougher than it was going to. Oh, okay, let's take a break. So there hasn't been a lot of time. I don't think a lot of people have been proactive in taking a step back and going, maybe now is a time where we need to really rethink our core values, because core values aren't something that you just create in the beginning of your organization. You set them and then you forget about them. You should be revisiting them every single year to make sure that they still make sense with your business as it grows, because there may need to be things that shift and continue.
Certainly. An ongoing evolution of the company and the culture and the organization and the standards. You spend some time on internal communication. And what is good internal communication look like within an organization?
Yeah, 100%. And communication is so tough. It's one of the hardest leadership characteristics and leadership skills to develop, because it's so complex, right? There's verbal communication, there's nonverbal communication. You can deliver the same message to seven people and they're going to hear it seven different ways because of their own experiences and perspectives. And sometimes you have to say the same message. I will say that
certainly
one of the great things that came out of the pandemic for me was the importance of internal communication. And I had always had manager blogs at the end of the shift that would, you'd write it. If I was closing the shift, I would write a blog about what happened. The owners would read that. So if they were off, they understood, or multi-unit, they knew what was going on, even though they weren't in the room. That also set my managers up for success for the next shift, in case there was something that I needed them to get done. There was a reservation note for the next day, or a private party, or whatever the case was. So at the leadership level, that's a really simple, basic way that you can enhance communication. But from the hourly perspective, during the pandemic, we were using Schedulefly, and they had an internal communication platform where employees could, shift swaps or important messages that needed to happen right away. So if we had to close, if there was a new pandemic update, as hours of operation change, whatever it was such a powerful way to get that message out to people immediately, because it was via text message. Not a lot of people, hourly employees don't read emails, but text messages are read 100% of the time. So it's about designing systems, internal communication systems that work best and then you can hold people accountable to, well, we're setting up this platform for you. If you're choosing not to engage, right, not engage in the system, then that's on you. But I think that those platforms are just so necessary, and they're so available in today's tech world.
I mean, I've seen some incredible leaps and bounds of just short form video training apps that can be followed along by management, and it's just right handy on their hand. So in a couple sentences or a paragraph, you meet a new restaurant, some principals from a restaurant group who want to grow, and you want to lay out the blueprint to them in a simple or complex way as possible. I mean, without really knowing what's going on in their company, it would be hard to, like you said, because it's so customized, right? So I'm just curious, from your perspective, what were the things that you struggled with during this explosive growth period when you were with this restaurant company?
Losing my voice was the biggest one. I was talking to somebody about this morning. Imposter syndrome really set up for me, really showed up. When I was in a larger leadership role with the independent group that I was a managing partner of. And we opened 5 different concepts in 5 years. I was wearing a lot of hats. I was HR, I was training, I was programming the POS, I was running the Cat 5, I was doing leadership development, helping with interviews, training, soft openings, all the things, menu descriptions, testing. And I could identify a problem quickly and create a system. And that was really, really rewarding to me and a big part of who I am and my values. And I did not realize that at the time. I didn't realize what my values were until I was 40. When we started growing with this other restaurant group and duplicating the same concept over and over and over and over again, I started to lose some of that passion and creativity that I had in the independent space. Because we weren't duplicating concepts, we didn't know where things should go. We didn't know what was going to land with guests and what didn't. So it was just an experiment every day. It was awesome.
Right.
It was so fun. So yeah. Much fun to play in. And when we were duplicating the same concept over and over again, we started to bring in all of these key players with all of this industry experience growing chain restaurants. And I started for the first time in my career to feel like I didn't have the skill set to be able to help take this company. And that fucking...
Yeah. So how did you...
Not well. Not well. Instead of leaning in and spending time with those key leaders and learning from them, I viewed that everybody was too busy and that I was too small of a fish in the pond. And so I went internal instead of expressing the curiosity that I don't. I let my boss impact my confidence and shut down a lot of the ideas that I had. And I internalized it and I drank really heavily to cover up how unhappy I was. And I really let my mental and physical health diminish. And I want to make sure anybody else.
So when did things, by the way, thank you, because you spoke to something like in my heart that I had struggled with, right? Like feeling like you don't know where you belong. Or what kind of impact you can have, or that when you start doubting yourself because your boss takes up all the space in the room or whatever that conversation is,
yeah,
God, it sucks. And so when did things start shifting for you?
It was, I left that job and I went on to a different company that was locally owned, that was growing. And I was engaged and reinvigorated for a second. But I wasn't addressing a couple of the issues. I was still drinking heavily because then by that point it was a habit. Mm-hmm. So everything changed for me when I stopped drinking, got a clear head, started working with a coach, and realized what my core values were, that I wasn't living my values, and that I had stopped investing in myself from a leadership perspective. When I was younger, if I wanted something, I'd try to go find it. I was all about Danny Meyer's book, Setting the Table. It was my Bible. I would buy it, train all the staff on it for new openings. I had lost that motivation to go, to get curious and to go invest in myself. And so once I rediscovered that that was a responsibility that I needed to take on everything.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you got rid of a lot of distractions.
Mental.
Well, sure. Well, and some emotional ones too, right? I think we employ tools to make ourselves feel better, and some are beneficial and some are not beneficial. Anything to the dream, like even exercising is too much, but I'm not going to knock anybody for trying something because I have a great deal of trust in that given some space and perspective, they can make another decision for themselves. And so No, I speak for many of us that, like, man, I'm glad you're here.
Right back at you. And I'm glad I'm here too.
And are you starting, like, do you recognize yourself in others? In, like, you walk into a room to do a workshop and all of a sudden you look over there in the
100%.
Corner.
100%. I mean, the things you're probably like this too, but a lot of the things that we coach are the things that we're still trying to teach ourselves. So I attract my ideal client as somebody who's just like me. Right. It was incredibly driven and has a really hard time slowing down and braiding their car.
But you've made that a core element of your life now.
Yeah, I had to put the systems in place. I had to design my lifestyle, put the systems in place, set the boundaries, and then hold myself accountable to it and recognize the feeling emotionally and physically when I am not in alignment. That's my journey. That's how I
And, my mind and what does it feel like for you?
Will not stop. My anxiety will start to tick up. I start to kind of get, and that's when I immediately just freeze where I'm at and take a few deep breaths and just recognize, hey, this is going on right now. So finish your day or take a break or whatever you need to do and get outside and get some time in nature ASAP and get off the tech.
Protect yourself. Like, I knew it was a big thing when I heard it, when you said that to me, and I call it design the alliance. And I'm like, what? Because I'd struggled with productivity. And so I'm trying all these different calendar blocks and all that stuff, all the while trying to think of how do I design this? Right. I used to write crazy because the first thing I did after exercise, meditation, and 600 words, like it wasn't 600 words. It could have been 1,000 words, but whatever. It's that is that block. Right. And there's part of me that misses that. That kind of rigor, because I know, again, I have to be very clear in my communication with everybody. Nope, this is it. Please don't come in my office when the door is locked. I'll come out. We need to sit in the morning or sit in the evening so we can communicate. All those little weird things that people are like, oh, I don't want to communicate like that. But it makes so much. I enjoy knowing what to expect. Not because I'm an anxious person, because then I can rearrange my day. So is there one or two things that you most hope that aspirational restaurateurs will take away from your book other than hiring you?
This is a resource. You know, the majority of the goal with this book is this is a very needed resource. If you implement one thing in this book, your organization. We were just talking about 1%, right? On our previous conversation. It's just about getting 1% better every day. And any of these tools could be powerful enough to help your organization. Now, imagine what your organization could look like if you implemented all of them over a 9 or 12 month period.
But to your point, you know, again, it's not like we're not doing this as a shotgun blast. We're going to do it strategically. We're going to roll out these initiatives over time, because, you know, I've rolled out some initiatives that I thought were the greatest thing since sliced bread, and, you know, they still fall flat on their face. But at least, you know, the underlying message is that we're trying, like we're working on this, like we're not sitting back on our heels waiting for it to come to us. And when you're trying to create a culture of accountability, that goes a long way. So I commend you for this. And I got to ask, what's the next book?
I know, but
I know
not,
you have it up there on the whiteboard.
No, I don't want to talk about it yet.
You know what I'm saying? Good, because that gives you another reason to come on the show. And I know that this is all of us right now seem to be in a bit of a transition in our lives, careers, family, all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to ask you what your core values are, okay? Although I should, because maybe it'll ring true for some folks. But where is your focus leading you, say, the next 12 months?
I'm intending to cause disruption in the multi-unit space for independent restaurants. And what I mean by that is taking this framework on the road, traveling the world, working with restaurant owners, hosting speaking engagements around this, workshops around this, getting the word out to as many people as possible.
At scale, on purpose.
Yeah.
On time. Perfect. And Kristen, just to remind everybody how they can get in touch
with
you.
Grab a free copy of the book at arfbook.com. So that's Independent Restaurant Framework book.com. You can grab your free copy. And there's a little bonus in there too. And if you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, I'd love to have a conversation about anything that's happening in the business, or just say hi. And that's Kristen-Marvin. And my name is spelled C-H-R-I.
Okay. I made that mistake every time. It's the damn autofill. What I'd like to say is thank you very much for being here. I know you're doing really important work that more people take you up on your offer. Because I didn't get a bonus. I didn't get anything.
Okay.
Come to your house.
Give me a month. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Once you get settled, and then after that, you're probably going somewhere. Who knows where? Off to help the world, make it a better place. But there goes Kristen.
Thank you, friend.
Thanks very much.
That's a wrap for today's episode of Chef Life Radio. If this resonated with you, do me a favor, subscribe, share, and leave a review. Your feedback helps us reach more culinary leaders like you who are ready to take their kitchens to the next level. Want more? Connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, or join our Chef Life Radio community for exclusive insights and leadership tools. Remember, leadership isn't about perfection, it's about progress. So take what you've learned today and apply it in your kitchen, your team, and your life. Chef Life Radio is more than just a podcast, it's a movement. The focus is no longer just on career survival, but on transforming leadership, creating sustainability, and ensuring chefs can build kitchens that thrive. Remember, the secret ingredient to culinary success isn't just in the food, it's in the leadership. Keep learning, keep growing, and as always, lead with the heart. See you next time.